قرية من نبي إلا خضنا لها بالبأساء والضراء
إلا أخذنا أهلها بالبأساء والضراء لعلهم يضرعون
إلا أخذنا أهلها بالبأساء والضراء لعلهم يضرعون
ثم بدلنا مكان السيئة الحسنة حتى عفوا وقالوا وقالوا قد مس آباءنا الضراء والسراء فأخذناهم بغتة وهم لا يشعرون
وقالوا قد مس آباءنا الضراء والسراء فأخذناهم بغتة وهم لا يشعرون
Alright, let's pay attention to the ikhfaf mean.
فأخذناهم بغتة وهم لا يشعرون
فأخذناهم بغتة وهم لا يشعرون
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
Ahsantum. Thank you so much. Allah bless you, brothers and sisters. Thanks for listening to IRB English Radio. That's it from us for today. See you in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. وعجل فرجهم
Let's recite the Quran A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
Black and white.
In response to the countries and the nations who dare to take their destiny in their own hands, to self-government, to self-determination, to simply be independent,
a simplemente ser independientes,
the imperialist forces and the imperialist countries take different measures. One of the most perverse measures are the blockades and sanctions. Particularly those exercised by the United States. also by Western Europe, and sometimes even by some international organizations, such as the United Nations. Beware. The main function of these blockades is to try to complicate the life to the inhabitants of the countries with whom they have contradictions and want them to change their way of thought, government, and administration. Because it seems that freedom, free trade, and self-determination does not exist for them. Of course, it doesn't exist. And they immediately take measures that in some cases have resulted in very serious issues in nutrition, medicine, and the most essential elements in some countries. That is to say, who is ultimately punished is the people who receive the sanctions.
Los gobiernos que han sido sancionados.
The governments that have been constantly sanctioned have become stronger in relation to their population and have changed the development model in such a way that, as the great Chinese leader and founder of the People's Republic of China, Mao Zedong, said, the reactionaries lift the rock in their hands to such an extent that when they hold it up, it falls off on their own feet. And the sanctions become something negative for those who have imposed them.
Y se convierten las sanciones en algo negativo para quienes la han llevado adelante. Así tenemos, por ejemplo, que...
Thus, for example, among 17 sanctioned countries with the highest number of sanctioned companies, individuals, and private entities,
particulares,
some have been strengthened to such a level, as is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, which has had sanctions since 1950. The Republic of Cuba, which has had sanctions since 1960, and almost total since 1962. And the Islamic Republic of Iran since 1979.
Bueno, también tenemos a Venezuela.
Well, we also have Venezuela, where we have Venezuela today that is satisfying almost 90% of its food consumption through internal production, something that has never been in history.
Los países sancionados.
The sanctioned countries, Nicaragua and Russia, strengthen their internal construction, their internal market,
su mercado interno, su industria,
their internal industry, in such a way that they advance scientifically and militarily, deepening their independence and sovereignty, which has been a setback for imperialism. It is true that a cost that had to be paid. And that affects the people, all the inhabitants of the country that is sanctioned. It is the madness of imperialism, that fanatic thing of subduing others through hunger. This is what the gringos and North Americans do. This is what the Americans do. But it goes against them. Today, in the Gaza Strip, Gazans are the most sanctioned on the planet. There, not even medicines, water, or anything else is allowed to enter. Zionism and its godfather, North American imperialism, are the ones leading it. The people are wise. They persevere on the path of independence and sovereignty.
En el camino de la independencia y la soberanía.
The sanctions have proven to be a fiasco at the end of the day. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. Hoy, para hablar desde sanciones y bloqueos.
Today, we have a guest from Italy to talk about sanctions and blockade by imperialist powers against nations, governments, and countries. Fabrizio Cassari, Italian journalist and international analyst, expert in analyzing economic sanctions and punitive measures applied by capitalist powers against nations. Fabrizio Cassari, welcome to Black and White.
A negro y blanco.
Thank you for your invitation. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Fabrizio, desde ubiquémonos en nuestra época desde el punto de vista contemporáneo.
At the current historical stage, what are the goals, consequences, and manifestations of these policies and sanctions by the imperialist powers?
De sanciones y bloqueos por parte de las potencias imperialistas.
La política de bloqueo y de sanciones es parte.
The policy of blockade and sanctions is called the fourth and fifth generation war, depending on who brings it up. The modern war, which the unipolar world starts, is to simply prevent the world from becoming multipolar. In order to prevent the loss of its hegemonic role as a group, the West is increasingly using all the tools of the fifth generation war, that is, diplomacy, politics, and above all, the media and sanctions, which are the tools of this war. Sanctions today affect 17 countries with specific and selective measures and 6 countries with general measures. We must note that the type of these actions can be general or targeted at individuals. Therefore, a total of 23 countries have been targeted by unilateral, illegitimate, and illegal sanctions. We are talking about 72% of the world's population and more than 30% of the entire world's GDP. I said this to understand the size and the scope of this action. Sanctions, on the other hand, result from a clear but unfair desire to win a competition, competing with products and markets. When you ban the export of a country's products and when you have the same product, you will be the only option for purchase. Furthermore, when you prevent a country from using the international transaction withdrawal system, things get more complicated. The effect of this action is not only on your target country, but also on all countries that want to do business with it. This gets even more complicated when you block a country from accessing SWIFT transactions and also block it from using the dollar currency. When a country is sanctioned, the only option left is to buy Western goods. With these conditions, the West keeps its economy in a state of addiction and says that it is the best and biggest economy. But no, the reason is sanctions. As I told you, sanctions are not a substitute for war. Many times you are told that sanctions are a substitute for war. This is a lie. Sanctions are the art of war. This should be clarified. And in the following, you will see their dire goals.
Entonces esto habría que quedarlo claro, claro. Y vamos a ver después cuáles son sus objetivos finales, ¿no?
Así es. Las sanciones son parte de la guerra. Ahora bien, ¿cómo los pueblos?
Yes, that's right. Sanctions are part of the war. Now, according to the current situation that we are witnessing, the situation has changed. As we know, we see American countries that have stood up for their rights, and how the Democratic People's Republic of Korea has strengthened in science and the military sector, etc. And Venezuela has made an incredible progress in food production. And Iran has solved a series of issues in the food security sector and has made progress in the scientific and military fields. And also in the case of Russia, it seems that the sanctions have had the opposite effect.
La propia Rusia, ¿no es cierto? Pareciera ser que el efecto fue al revés, ¿no? Es decir, hoy día.
Is there a case today that sanctions have been able to achieve the goal of overthrowing a government and changing the direction of a country?
A un gobierno a cambiar la orientación de ese estado?
Jamás, ni uno. Ni uno.
Never, not a single one. There is no country in the world that has been overthrown due to Western sanctions. When I say Western sanctions, it is actually an implicit meaning that means U.S. sanctions. And then the rest of the West also follows these sanctions, but they're not the ones who impose the sanctions. I mean specifically the European Union. EU sanctions are ridiculous. For example, it's funny when Latin American countries like Nicaragua is sanctioned because Europe's trade relations with Nicaragua are very small. What does Nicaragua lose when sanctioned? What we see is that the ultimate goal of sanctions is to topple governments. Who are these sanctions against? Against all governments that do not submit their political sovereignty, resources and political identity to the West, or in fact America. Countries that believe that they have the right to choose their own government, as well as the right to choose the government's program, goals, and international stance, are considered enemies. How do they become enemies? A campaign is started which almost always says that those countries are violating human rights.
Se comienza la campaña diciendo que esos países casi siempre, siempre violan los derechos humanos.
Ahí vamos a quedar.
We will take a break for a few moments and then continue the second part with Fabrizio Casari.
Volvemos, estamos acá con Fabrizio Casari.
Back here we are with Fabrizio Casari. The discussion is about embargo and blockade. You were giving reasons for your own explanations. Go ahead, Fabrizio, please.
Adelante, por favor, Fabrizio.
Y lo que decía es que no haya habido ni un gobierno en el mundo.
Yes, I was saying that there is not a single government in the world that has been overthrown due to the sanctions of the United States and the West. And there is no government that will fall because of this in the future. This is a zero-sum game, and when despite the efforts of America and the West, when the desired result is not achieved, it means America's defeat. Sanctions are illegitimate because they have not been declared by any international court or the United Nations, which are the only organizations that have the authority to impose sanctions. These sanctions are illegal because they're not announced by the courts. They are announced by the offices of a ministry, and they are part of the political actions. These sanctions are unfair because the people being sanctioned have nothing to do with the government that may or may not fall. But the reality is that they hit the governments that do not surrender their political sovereignty and resources to America. Governments that do not want to determine their own political line and place in international confrontations in exchange for not being sanctioned. These countries are immediately considered by the U.S. as enemy countries, and then the U.S. says that these countries violate human rights or claim that these countries are declared an extraordinary threat to the security of the U.S. Why do they say this, despite the fact that it is a country 30,000 kilometers away? They say this, and they make management statements about it so that they later commit the most theft of resources based on these words. They must have a political justification for their robberies and looting, otherwise the law of America itself will not allow them to do so. The point is that 72% of the world's population is sanctioned by the other 25%. Can a system like this continue to work? Obviously not. Can almost 30% of the GDP be sanctioned? Because the one who used to have 60% of the production and now this figure doesn't even reach 40% of the world's gross domestic product makes such a decision. These are questions that all lawyers and people with knowledge in the world have. But in addition to some of this conversation, there's also the boomerang effect of sanctions. What will happen? When some countries are sanctioned, the United States and Europe cannot officially sell those products, and this causes their products to be stockpiled. These products expire. For one, because I remind you again, we are talking about 72% of the world's population. So when you know that you can't do business with 72% of the world's population, you can't sell anything to them. You can't buy anything from them. Your production will only be for 28% of the world's population. This amount is very, very low. So your economy will have very, very little growth and possibly negative growth. So this is what is officially on paper, while the U.S. has historically shown that it sanctions with one hand and negotiates with the other. One example is that they announced that they want to impose the biggest and toughest sanctions in history against Russia. Now, on the other hand, as a result of this action, the growth of Russia's GDP is higher than that of the European Union, which said it wanted to finish Russia's work. On the other hand, the oil and gas that reaches Europe, which they said can no longer come from Russia, still comes from Russia. It just happens that it goes through other countries, and because of that, they charge you more. So you have the same oil as before, just a little less volume, and you're paying a lot more money for it than before. And you're no longer dependent on one country, but three or four. And of course, the gas that you are going to get from the US, the US liquefied natural gas, the amount is very small and not enough for Europe at all. And the price is much more expensive than what Russia was giving you. So what a smart person at the center of the unipolar imperial decision-making apparatus would adopt such a stupid strategy.
Cuarto decisional del imperio unipolar decide semejante estrategia idiota.
Una estrategia idiota, como dices tú, Fabricio. De cualquier manera...
A stupid strategy, as you said, Fabrizio. Fortunately, countries have been able to industrialize and ensure their own food security and develop in this direction. This is one of the consequences of sanctions. This is a very complicated matter. On the other hand, there is a very interesting phenomenon, which is the coordination, unity and cooperation between the embargoed countries, which is a kind of resistance and building a different environment.
Que también es una forma de resistencia y de construir un espacio distinto. Mira.
Look, the nations of the sanctioned countries use their intelligence to make fun of many, or in fact all, sanctions. I remember when I was in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, they definitely made fun of some of the sanctions. As I remember that in the period of socialist Albania, in the period between 1976 and 1986, there were large companies producing textile products, and all of their products ended up in the market with the label Made in Italy.
Mucho. Y todos al final salían al mercado y estaban en el mercado con la etiqueta Made in Italia.
This means that nations have the ability to overcome sanctions and blockades in any way. What experience do you have of dealing with and passing behind sanctions?
Para superarlos. ¿Qué experiencia tú ves aquí en el desarrollo desde los pueblos para enfrentar y superar estas sanciones?
La cuestión es incrementar.
The issue is a significant increase in development of South-South relations. South-South relations should take the place of North. Today it is much easier to exchange products with any other country than it was 20 years ago. Every country can achieve a level of production of products and services. The policy of imperialism is stupid because they don't take into account that in the past, until about 50 to 20 years ago, resources were exchanged with technology and its improvements. Today, the owners of resources no longer need new technologies. Because firstly, some countries have very, very advanced technology. And secondly, if the technology doesn't reach them, there are countries that are willing to give the technology, for example, China, Russia, and Brazil itself. So what is the threat where the logic of exchange prevails? When you pay the price of my product at the international market, and if you want, you cannot do the exchange, the idea of you sanctioning me is stupid. You see, they sanctioned the Russian oil and gas pipeline to Europe and wanted to prevent Russian gas from reaching Europe. But what happened was that gas flows from Turkey and Azerbaijan and then returns here. What did Russia do? It used to have a strong trading partner, the European Union, and specifically Germany and two lines that transported oil and gas quickly and directly. For political reasons, he sold gas at a very low price. Today, it sells this gas at a relatively higher price to India and China and to other countries such as Pakistan, countries that did not buy it before. Russia started diversifying its customers and therefore has many more customers than before and is much less dependent on one customer only.
Al diversificar la cartera, a tener mucho más gente que te compra, tener mucha menos dependencia de cualquiera de ellos.
La realidad actual donde se comienza
Today's reality is that countries are starting to do business with their own national currencies. India works with rupees, Russia with rubles, China with yuan, etc. Today, therefore, the dollar is not very decisive. How does this approach affect the possibility of circumventing or neutralizing sanctions?
En la posibilidad de sortear o burlar las sanciones.
Mira, hermano, en una forma muy fácil, es un desastre para Estados Unidos.
Look, brother, this is very easy. It's a disaster for America, because thanks to the dollar, as the only player in international exchange, America was given the ability and power in international trade to determine who sells what and who buys what and the terms of payment. And this way it earns billions of dollars per day per transaction. This situation is not going to continue now. The dollar will no longer be the only medium of exchange. According to the predictions made in a 10-year period, the dollar will probably not be the first currency. Why? Because as always, there's a proverb that says, idiots, in addition to being stupid, also become blind. When the US tried to sanction Russia, it made it impossible for Russia to access the dollar market and the Russian account was blocked, like what they did with Venezuela in the past. Most of the countries in the international level have resources abroad. For emergencies, it can happen. Now, most all strategic reserves have been in dollars. Now, there are many countries that say, if I ever get into a conflict with America for any reason, America will stop me and take all my reserves from me. No, it is better not to do this. And they are de-dollarizing their reserves. There are many countries that willingly de-dollarize their resources gradually without creating a monetary shock. And many more countries are planning to do this. Having less dollars means having less demand for dollars. Less demand for dollars means less production of dollars. Less production of dollars means that the U.S. debt cannot be paid.
Por la deuda de los Estados Unidos, la cara de impagable.
Gracias, Fabricio. Desgraciadamente.
Thank you, Fabrizio. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of the program. Thank you very much for your participation. This is Black and White.
Muchas gracias.
De nada. Adiós.
Adiós.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio. The Limelight.
Opening arguments began on Monday morning, 22nd of April, in Donald Trump's historic hush money trial. Trump, who seemed to doze off, was woken up when a prosecutor called him a liar. We take a look at the US media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump is on trial in New York City, where he is facing felony charges relating to a 2016 hush money payment to a film actress Stormy Daniels. It marks the first time in history that a former US president has been tried on criminal charges. Donald Trump last April pleaded not guilty to a 34-count indictment charging him with falsifying business records to hide the reimbursement of a hush money payment his then-attorney Michael Cohen made to Stormy Daniels in order to boost his electoral prospects in the 2016 presidential election. Prosecutors have called former American Media Inc. executive David Pecker as their first witness in the trial. The district attorney alleges that David Pecker, who oversaw the National Enquirer, engaged in a conspiracy with Donald Trump and Trump's then-attorney Michael Cohen to help influence the 2016 election by killing negative stories about Trump. David Pecker, who once called Donald Trump a personal friend of mine, flashed a big smile as he took the stand as the trial's first witness, belying the gravity of the moment. Pecker, 72 years old, was the publisher of the National Enquirer, but prosecutors said he was acting as a co-conspirator in helping buy and bury damaging stories about Donald Trump. Trump, who once said Pecker would make a brilliant choice as editor of Time magazine, listened while leaning forward in his chair, arms crossed on the table, an unhappy look on his face. David Pecker testified that he had final say whether to publish any story involving a famous person. "I had the final say of the celebrity side of the magazine," Pecker said. "We used checkbook journalism. We paid for the stories." David Pecker is testifying pursuant to a subpoena. He has also secured a non-prosecution agreement with the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. Meanwhile, Donald Trump's defense attorney Todd Blanche in his opening statement said, "Donald Trump is not just our former president, he's not just Donald Trump that you've seen on television, he's also a man, he's a husband and a father." Todd Blanche pushed back on the district attorney's overall allegation that the payments to Trump's attorney Michael Cohen weren't only payback for Stormy Daniels by using the prosecutor's own words against him. Todd Blanche noted that Michael Cohen paid $130,000 to Stormy Daniels, but that Donald Trump paid back Cohen a total of $420,000. If Trump really was a frugal businessman, as prosecutors claim, why would he overpay that money? Todd Blanche asked. Ask yourself, would a frugal businessman, a man who pinched his pennies, repay a $130,000 debt to the tune of $420,000? Blanche asked. Todd Blanche repeatedly reiterated that Michael Cohen truly was an attorney for Trump and was doing legal work for him, pointing out that Michael Cohen's own email signature noted he was Trump's attorney. "None of this was a crime," Todd Blanche said, saying the 34 counts against Donald Trump are really just 34 pieces of paper. The American newspaper, The Daily Beast, has also covered the same story. Opening statements had not yet begun on Monday, 22nd of April, when former President Donald Trump dozed off for the first time. He quickly opened his eyes when defense attorney Todd Blanche slid him a note as prosecutors prepared to kick off opening arguments in the historic trial, which hinges on accusations that the former president falsified business records over a $130,000 hush money payment to film actress Stormy Daniels in an effort to keep her quiet as the 2016 presidential election loomed. The trial marks the only time in American history that a former commander-in-chief has been tried on criminal charges. If convicted, Donald Trump could face up to 4 years behind bars. "You must decide this case on the evidence," Judge Juan Merchan instructed the jury. Donald Trump's eyes appeared to close again as Judge Merchan continued laying out the ground rules to the five women and seven men from various parts of Manhattan who were seated as jurors last week, along with six alternates who were also present in the jury box. The first day of proceedings gave both sides an opportunity to offer their initial arguments to the jury, who paid rapt attention even as the 45th president looked as if he'd rather be anywhere else. Prosecutors called their first witness, former tabloid king David Pecker, who took the stand to describe how checkbook journalism worked in this case. Reporters were under strict instructions from Judge Juan Merchan not to be too descriptive about the members of the jury, so as not to make them easily identifiable to the public and to protect their safety outside of the courtroom. Assistant District Attorney Matthew Colangelo kicked off opening arguments laying out the prosecution's case against Donald Trump, accusing him of orchestrating a criminal scheme that would corrupt the 2016 presidential election. "This case is about a criminal conspiracy and a cover-up," Matthew Colangelo said, arguing that he lied over and over again. He said Donald Trump, Michael Cohen, and National Enquirer boss David Pecker formed a conspiracy to silence film actress Stormy Daniels. All in all, the defendant distinguished his reimbursements to Michael Cohen by a way of falsifying checks and ledger entries that amounted to a criminal scheme, Matthew Colangelo argued. Colangelo added, "Then he covered up that criminal conspiracy by lying in his New York business records over and over and over again," Colangelo said. Donald Trump also launched a conspiracy with David Pecker, who took direction from Trump to bury negative stories about him while slamming his opponents, including Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, who was also vying for the GOP presidential nomination at the time. "This," Colangelo told the jury, "is called catch and kill." Donald Trump and David Pecker and Michael Cohen carried out three different catch and kill deals to help him get elected. The schemes involved the candidate's fixer actively colluding with a media enterprise to keep negative information from coming out before the 2016 presidential election.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, and my guest speaker, as always, Sheikh Javid. Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the program again.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. Well, like before, we are going to talk about some of the jurisprudential laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But this time, we are going to actually devote a couple of sessions to the rules about mosque. So, Sheikh, let's start with this general question regarding mosques, or basically offering prayers in the mosque.
We all know that the mosques, in fact, hold a special place in the minds of all Muslims, right? Yes. It's like the church. Maybe it is not even the similar to the concept of the church for Christians.
Sure.
Because Christians usually, you know, go to the church on Sundays. They don't go there every day. But the mosques are not like this for Muslims. They not only go there every day, but a couple of times a day, right?
Yes,
to offer the prayer with the imam, with you know, somebody who's leading the other Muslims in the prayers. So would you tell our dear audience about the importance of this and how important is it for the individuals to basically say their prayers in the mosques rather than individually?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you rightly mentioned, great emphasis has been laid on offering prayers in mosques. And indeed, mosques are different from in terms of the amount of sawab that you might achieve.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on which mosque you perform your prayers, is it, for example, Masjid al-Haram or Masjid al-Nabi or Masjid Kufa or Masjid al-Aqsa or your local mosque or maybe the central mosque on in your city?
Yes.
So, of course, the Masjid al-Haram, there's no doubt as to the fact that it is superior to all other mosques. It is the most important mosque. And then comes Masjid al-Nabi, which is the next most important mosque in the Islamic world. And then, of course, we have Masjid Kufa, which is also very well known, especially for the Shias, because Shia Muslims who go to Kufa, they perform their prayers in that mosque because of the tremendous sawab that it has. It you earn praying in that mosque. Of course, there's no doubt that if you offer your prayers in Jama'ah, then if all the trees become pain and all the ocean turns into ink, and the sawab, the reward cannot be written, cannot be recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we have the Masjid Jame in your city. Every city has a central mosque.
Yes,
of course the sawab,
like a cathedral.
Yes, the sawab in the prayer offered in Masjid Jame or the central mosque is more compared to the sawab of the masjid of the prayer offered in a local mosque.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that in this time around, of course, unfortunately, we have very few people going to the mosques. And there are hadith traditions from our infallible imams. For example, Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam says, ثَلَاثَةٌ يَشْكُونَ إِلَى اللَّهِ عَزَّ وَجَلَّ. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
مَسْجِدٌ خَرَابٌ لَا يُسَلِّ فِيهِ أَهْلُ. One of the things which complain to Allah Almighty is the mosque, in which the people in the neighborhood where the mosque is situated do not go to offer their prayers in the mosque. On the day of resurrection, one of the things which complained to Allah Almighty is the mosque.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but no one was coming to me to offer their prayers. Okay, and then there is alimun bayna juhal. And alimun bayna juhal, the knowledgeable person living among the ignorant people, they do not go to the alim to ask their questions, religious questions, theological questions. And then, mushafun mu'allakun qad waqa'a alayhi al-ghubar. And then the Holy Quran, which is, for example, placed on the shelves of your house, and it is there, but it's collecting dust. Okay, so these are the three things which, according to Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam, which will complain to Allah Almighty on the day of judgment for not being attended.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yes.
Okay, let me stop you there actually for a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program after the short break. You're listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
Mm-hmm. The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And Sheikh Jobid, our guest speaker. We are talking about the general jurisprudential rules regarding praying in the mosque with Sheikh. Sheikh, you were saying?
Yeah, that was my point. And of course, it is very important for a Muslim individual who is adherent, who is a practicing Muslim, to leave the comfort of his house or the couch he sits and go to the mosque.
Yes.
And of course offer his prayers in the mosque. It is not only in the person offering his prayers in the mosque, mm-hmm. not only earn the reward for praying, but he also respects
yes.
the mosque. And of course, وَمَن يُعَظِّمْ شَعَائِرَ اللَّهِ فَإِنَّهَا مِن تَقْوَى الْقُلُوبِ. So one of the signs of God is definitely the mosque. The verse says that whoever builds a mosque, or you see, revives the mosque,
mm-hmm.
it is a sign of iman. You see, it's not only building a mosque does not mean only constructing it. A person who keeps a mosque alive and leaves it, keeps it moving, acting, visiting the mosque, and the mosque is always remains with visitors, then of course it is a sign of iman in the day of in God and also in the day of judgment.
Thank you very much, Shavid. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Stay with us.
Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina wa Nabiyina Muhammadin wa Ali.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And Sheikh Jobidar, guest speaker. We're still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to offering prayers in the mosque based on fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini with Sheikh Jobid. Sheikh, there is a question, especially we Shias face that, what about the shrines of the imams? Are they considered as mosques, or they need to be actually some kind of pronunciation of some formula for them to be actually considered as mosques? I mean, lots of Muslims, especially from the Shiite school of thought, they go to the shrines and they offer the prayers there, right?
Yes, of course.
So do they hold the same status as the mosques?
Obviously, the namaz or prayer in the shrines of the holy imams is mustahab,
mm-hmm.
and in some cases, of course, the reward is much more than offering your prayer in a mosque. For
yes.
example, it has been reported that the reward for offering prayers in a sacred shrine like the shrine of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salatu wasalam is 200,000. Okay, mm-hmm. if you offer one rakat, it is as if you have offered 200,000 rakas.
Right.
So that the reward is tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the shrine is not treated as a mosque because they are two different things. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you can enter the premises of the holy shrine,
mm-hmm.
the holy shrine, but you cannot enter a mosque and stay there or sit there or leave there, put something there, pick something up from the mosque. But these are the things you can do in a shrine. Okay,
mm-hmm.
You can enter the shrine. You can enter the for example the corridors or the porch, and then but you cannot get close to the to the chamber, okay?
Right.
Especially when it comes to ladies who are menstruating, of course, they should not get close to the zarih or the chamber,
right,
as they say.
Okay. What about the yard, for example, of the mosque? I mean,
yeah, depending on where the formula of the mosque has, you know, the mosque applies, okay? If it is part of the mosque and it is considered to be part of the mosque, so the formula applies to it. Uh-huh. And it is considered to be mosque. And, of course, the rules which are applied to the very, to the mosque, which is believed to be the mosque, the main part of the mosque, is also or also applicable to that part of the mosque which
are.
Yes.
A very quick question, Sheikh, to the end of the program. We don't have much time. What's actually better for a woman to do, like to offer her prayers in a mosque or in her own home?
Well, for women, it is better to pray at such places where they are best protected from non-mahram, from strangers, from people who are considered to be non-mahram, of course, because it's important for the woman to observe their hijab, to dress properly, and it does not make any difference where they can better, of course, observe their hijab. Whether they can observe their hijab at home or in a mosque. And of course, they will earn the sawab, the reward for offering their prayers in a mosque. But hijab is much more important than offering your prayer in a place where you are exposed to the eyes of non-mahram. For example, especially if women offer their prayers in public places, in open places where men who are not related to the woman, you know, pass by, they see the woman, and maybe sometimes there is wind flying, you see, blowing against the woman's well, and maybe part of her hair or maybe neck or legs might become visible. In this case, of course, there is such probability, it is much better for her to perform her prayers in her home rather than coming out to the mosque and offering her prayers in places where she is not protected.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid, and thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to deal with some of the jurisprudential laws related to offering prayers in a mosque based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Rahmanun Rahimun Mannanun Kareemun Salamun Aleemun Maja ilaha illahum Ghaffarun Jameelun Wahhabun Latifun Tawwabun Sami'un Basir La ilaha illahum Wahid قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday www.irib.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.